We worked hard. We got a product. It's not a product that we are all in love with, but it's a product that we can support.
Alaska senators are on opposite sides of an immigration debate. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 15th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a plan to annex land to Juneau receives criticism from the lieutenant governor.
The people of Angoon feel so passionate and spiritual about all of Admiralty Island, all of Admiralty Island.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
The future of immigration reform is in doubt today after two proposals failed to win 60 votes in the U.S. Senate. One was President Trump's plan to grant legal status to 1.8 million young immigrants and spend at least $25 billion on border security. The other was a bipartisan compromise that would have legalized the same number of immigrants and spent $25 billion on border security, but over 10 years. And the bipartisan plan did not curtail family-based immigration as much as Trump wants. Alaska's U.S. senators split their votes on both bills. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Senator Lisa Murkowski was part of a bipartisan group that's been trying to get a compromise bill on immigration for weeks. She says it was uplifting to see Republicans and Democrats sit down and compromise on tough issues.
We worked hard. We got a product. It's not a product that we are all in love with, but it's a product that we can support.
Murkowski stood with 15 of her colleagues at a press conference to promote their compromise before the vote.
Nice to have such a good group. Turn off your phone.
One of Murkowski's closest Senate allies, Republican Susan Collins of Maine, co-chairs the group. They call themselves the Common Sense Coalition. When a reporter asked about the White House reaction to their solution, Collins turned the mic over to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
It'll be more colorful.
So you got the president, who is most days pretty good on this. The January 9th Tuesday Trump was awesome. Show back up. Get us to a solution. Obama tried. Bush tried. They failed. Mr. President, you can do this.
But Trump tweeted vehemently against the bipartisan measure. He said it would be a catastrophe, amnesty for criminals, and result in open borders. His cabinet lobbied Capitol Hill, urging senators to vote no. Trump said Democrats who want to help the young immigrants known as Dreamers should support his plan instead. In the end, neither measure passed the 60-vote threshold. The bipartisan compromise got 54 votes. Most of the no's came from Republicans, but three Democrats also voted no. A grim Senator Graham blamed both sides.
Well, I don't think the president helped very much, but the bottom line is the demagogues won again on the left and the right.
The Trump plan got only 39 votes. Among them, Senator Dan Sullivan. In a statement afterward, Sullivan called the bipartisan plan well-intentioned, but said it would have weakened border security and rewarded people for entering the country illegally. A spokesman said the senator spoke to the Homeland Security Secretary beforehand. Sullivan called America a nation of immigrants, but said immigration must be based on the rule of law. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Sutton resident Tom Brond withdrew today from consideration to fill the vacant Senate District E seat a day after he became Governor Bill Walker's second choice for the position. The appointment touched off criticism of Braun's history of social media posts about women, abortion, and immigration. Braun's posts to Facebook received scrutiny after Walker appointed him. They included a response to a post in 2017 where Braun said if he had the reins, quote, abortionists and all their accessories would be hunted and executed with scissors, cutting their hearts out, end quote. Another post compared women and dogs. Braun didn't respond to multiple phone calls requesting comment. Jessica Clare works for Planned Parenthood's lobbying organization in Alaska. She says Walker shouldn't have appointed Braun.
I think it's unacceptable and shocking that someone with a history of disparaging women and making violent remarks about reproductive health care providers would be nominated to fill a vacant Senate seat.
The governor's staff attempted to steer the criticism to Republicans who rejected Walker's first choice, Matt Nuska, Susitna Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalke. Walker says multiple Senate Republicans recommended he appoint Kowalke. A new possibility to fill the seat emerged this afternoon. The Republican Party advanced retired Palmer small business owner Vicki Wallner to replace Braun as one of three nominees. Once Walker makes a new appointment to replace Mike Dunleavy, Senate Republicans will decide whether to confirm the person. The other nominees for the seat are Representative George Rauscher and teacher Todd Smolden. A Walker spokesman said that Rauscher disqualified himself by making light of an alleged violent attack on a woman. Rauscher says he wasn't making light of anything. The dispute is over a sign Rauscher posted on his door after he read about an alleged assault by former Representative Zach Fansler. The sign said Rauscher's office was a, quote, BDSM-free zone, end quote. Fansler reportedly used the initials in a text to the woman. Rauscher says the sign wasn't intended as a joke, but was a message directed at Fansler.
There was really nobody in the Capitol at all that day. It was on the door for approximately 40 minutes as a statement to the representative across the hall.
For his part, Smolden said before Braun withdrew that he could be the only one of the nominees who isn't disqualified. But late today, the governor wrote to Republican Party leadership that he was rejecting both Rauscher and Smolden and asked district Republicans to submit two additional names. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott says Juneau is not behaving like a good neighbor. That's because it's annexing land another community says should be left alone. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Mallott criticized Juneau policymakers during his keynote speech to the Southeast Conference mid-session summit. The audience was more than 100 government, business, nonprofit, and tribal leaders from around the region. He lambasted officials for trying to annex parts of nearby Admiralty Island. Leaders from Angoon, the island's only city, oppose what they call a land grab.
Juneau needs to recognize that it is the capital of Alaska, but also the regional center of Southeast. And it has a responsibility and an obligation to reach out affirmatively to every other community in Southeast and say, let's be neighbors and let's work together and let's build a place that is unassailable by the legislature or anyone else who would seek to divide us.
The Juneau Assembly voted last month to add four parcels to its borough, including parts of Northern Admiralty Island. It later dropped one parcel after hearing objections from cabin owners, most of whom live in Juneau. Mallott, a former Juneau mayor, says officials should have the same response to objections from the island's traditional residents.
The people of Angoon feel so passionate and spiritual about all of Admiralty Island, all of Admiralty Island. They're concerned about economic development on that side of the island now. What's the future of their island that they share with the rest of our country as one of the most beautiful places on the face of the earth?
Most of Admiralty Island's million or so acres are protected as a national monument. It's often used for subsistence hunting and fishing, and development is extremely limited. But it's also home to the Greens Creek Mine, which has already been annexed by the capital city. Juneau Mayor Ken Kelsch says Mallott is wrong about officials not reaching out to its neighbors.
We attempted to go over to Angoon several times and were not able to find one that was acceptable to the mayor and group over there that we were trying to meet up with.
Kelch says he'll continue to try to set up a meeting. He also noted that Angoon Mayor Pauline Jim has since come before the assembly to voice her city's objections. Angoon residents cite their traditional ties to the island. Kelch says Juneau also has longtime connections to the land, including historic trade routes. The annexation process can take at least a year. Kelch says that gives Angoon and other opponents more chances to object.
The local boundary commission that's set up by the state has public hearings once we put the application in and involves everyone possible that would be affected by it.
Juneau began looking at expanding its borough after losing a boundary battle with Petersburg. Both boroughs claimed rights to absorb acreage on the mainland between the two communities. Juneau lost, in part because Petersburg petitioned for the property first, so officials began looking at other areas within model borough boundaries set years before. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the grandson of the North Slope's first mayor looks to carry on his legacy.
He did things for our people during his time, and I feel like I need to do something for our people during this time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you love a good mystery, Thursday nights on Alaska Public Media TV is the place for you. Join us every week as we search for clues, put the pieces together, and figure out who done it. Mystery Thursdays only on Alaska Public Media TV.
The Air Force has completed another round of cold weather testing on the F-35A that has been undergoing a series of tests at Eielson Air Force Base since it arrived in October. The testing is being conducted in preparation of two squadrons of F-35s that'll be based at Eielson beginning in 2020. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
While most of us were grumbling about the 30 below cold snap that set in for a while last month, Air Force personnel who came here from Southern California say the conditions were just right to test the F-35's ability to operate in chilly temperatures.
Our objective essentially was to take the F-35 up to a cold environment, which that definitely qualified as being a cold environment, probably colder than I've ever seen, and we were able to collect as much data as possible.
Colonel Michael Starr commands the Air Force Operational Test and Evaluation Center's 1st Detachment out of Edwards Air Force Base. And he says the testing that began in mid-January and wrapped up last week mainly involved checking out how the aircraft handled the cold during routine functions.
The main goal, main objective of the test was to see how the aircraft performed, not just start taxiing and take off, but also once we got to the range, how it was going to perform in certain mission sets.
Those mission sets included carrying out simulated combat scenarios. Starr says testing personnel also gained important knowledge by just pulling maintenance on the advanced fighter.
And it also included a heavy workload by maintenance. A lot of folks are out there in the cold weather, evaluating what it was like to do things on the aircraft required for a normal operation.
Starr says the next two rounds or increments of F-35 testing will subject the warplane to increasingly realistic combat scenarios that'll be conducted in a different extreme environment in Southern California, Arizona, and elsewhere around the Southwest.
Increment two is scale low-intensity type conflict issues that we're going to be dealing with. That starts this spring, if approved, with the appropriate agencies. And then we'll roll into increment three sometime this fall, again, if approved and if we're given the go-ahead. And that's more of a high-intensity type conflict operational test and evaluation.
Starr says the F-35s also are being tested by both the Navy and Marines, which would be getting their own variants of the aircraft, also known as the Joint Strike Fighter. F-35s also are being tested by U.S. allies that are interested in adding the warplane to their air forces, including the U.K., Netherlands, Norway, and Australia. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Vessels anchoring outside of Juneau's harbors, but within city waters, will soon need a permit if they remain for more than 24 hours. The Juneau Assembly approved the regulations crafted by the Docks and Harbor Board. Most of the affected waters are 200 yards from the breakwater barriers at Juneau's three harbors. Juneau Port Director Carl Yucatil says the goal is to prevent boats from becoming a public nuisance or liability.
We're trying to be reasonable and understand that there are transient boaters that want to come through and use our tidelands, and that's exactly what we want to provide, that resource. We do not want to be wet storage for vessels that are evicted out of the harbors and have a place for safe anchorage.
Deputy Mayor Jerry Nankervis cast the lone vote against approving the rules. He said he felt the language in the regulation should be returned to the Docks and Harbors Board for fine-tuning. He was overruled. They'll go into effect in early March. Some Unalaskans want the city to ban single-use plastic bags. 25 residents met last week to strategize on how best to make their case to the city. Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk attended the group's first meeting.
Mary Hymas says for a community that relies on the ocean, eliminating the bags should be a no-brainer.
You know, we pull a lot of money out of the ocean in this community, and we have a social responsibility to take care of that environment.
This is not Unalaska's first attempt to ban single-use bags. In 2013, a petition asking the city council to eliminate the use of plastic bags by Unalaska stores circulated around the community, but went nowhere. In Alaska, the bags have been banned in Kodiak, Wasilla, Bethel, Cordova, and Hooper Bay. Homer briefly prohibited the bags, but the ban was overturned by voters. This group is prepared for pushback against their efforts from stores and restaurants.
I'm all for the environment. I'm not against the plastic bag ban, but when you look at the overall picture, the people that are going to suffer will be the people within the community.
That's Safeway store manager Abe Palmer. Without plastic bags, he worries it will be difficult for people who walk with their groceries. He says rainy weather would destroy paper bags. And Palmer says a plastic bag ban would make groceries more expensive.
The elevated cost of what a paper sack is 5 times more than what it is for a plastic sack. All those costs would not be absorbed by the company. It would be absorbed going out into the customer's market.
He thinks education and reestablishing the recycling program could have the same effect as a plastic bag ban. Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson says whether it actually is more expensive to eliminate single-use bags is a matter of weighing immediate versus future costs.
It may be expensive to me to get rid of my garbage, mm-hmm. so I'm going to pass that on to future generations.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're faced with on this island is this landfill is filling up a bit quicker than they expected.
Robinson says he has asked the issue to be scheduled for discussion at a city council meeting next month. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
Kachemak Selo, a small Russian Old Believer village at the head of Kachemak Bay on the Kenai Peninsula, has been dealing with deteriorating school buildings for years. Their school, built about 30 years ago, has cracks in the walls, and students have complained to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly that they're at risk every time they enter the buildings. The state dedicated a little more than $10 million for a new school about 2 years ago, but the borough hasn't had the money to fund the rest of the roughly $16 million project. As KBBI's Renee Gross reports, the borough may ask taxpayers to pick up the rest of the tab.
Kachemak-Silo's school buildings have been in poor shape for years. The buildings have serious foundation problems and are sinking into the ground. Space is limited and cracks in the walls fail to protect students and staff from cold weather. 10th grader Antonin Merechov told the Kenai Borough Assembly Tuesday that a large earthquake in January has made things worse.
As you all know and heard many times, our school is in bad shape. Most of us kids have formed a theory that the walls will collapse if another earthquake were to hit us, based on the fact that they are already barely holding themselves together.
This desperate tone is something Borough Community and Fiscal Projects Manager Brenda Alberg understands.
And it's definitely been a long, arduous process. I would imagine that for our residents in KCLO probably feeling like it's been a little bit longer than it needs to be, and I completely appreciate that.
Alberg started working with the borough 9 years ago, and she says even then, the schools were in need of repair. But getting to the isolated village has made logistics difficult.
Given there is no road to haul large equipment or trucks, we looked at other aspects of building. We looked at even transportation alternatives that included a gondola. We looked at building alternatives that included a floating school. Because of the fact that we knew that this was going to be a very costly construction project.
Building the school isn't the only hurdle. Funding for the project is also in limbo. The state dedicated over $10 million back in 2016, but the borough has to throw in over $5 million of its own money into the project, funding it doesn't have.
And obviously at this time with our fiscal challenges that we're facing, we do not have $5 million sitting in an account that we can apply to this project.
Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce said at Tuesday's assembly meeting that he wants to go to bond for the borough's portion of the project, but time may be running out. Funding from the state is set to expire in 2019 if the borough doesn't come up with its match and use the money. Pierce says he wants to put the proposition to voters this fall in order to avoid the issue, but there is hope the legislator will extend the borough's deadline. A bill that would give the borough until 2021 to come up with funding has passed through the House and is now in the Senate. The bill would also give the borough an opportunity to look at other possibilities if the Assembly doesn't approve the bond proposition or voters shoot the proposition down. Alberg says the borough is keeping both of those scenarios in mind.
Well, then we got to go back to the drawing board and see what else that looks like. That means working with the state legislators. How can we get additional supplemental for the match?
The borough will meet Friday with residents to talk about site selection for the new school. Alberg expects the proposition to be introduced to the Assembly in May. In order to get the bond onto October's ballot, the Assembly will have to approve any proposition the borough administration comes up with by June. Reporting in Homer, I'm Renee Gross.
A new cohort of Alaskan teens started as Arctic Youth Ambassadors this past fall. Among other things, the program provides an opportunity for young people across the state to represent the concerns of their communities on an international level. One of those ambassadors is Eben Hobson, a 17-year-old in Utqiagvik, who's worried about how changes in the environment are already transforming his hometown. Ravenna Koenig from Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
It's 5 p.m. on a school night, and Eben Hobson is standing in the lobby of the Inupiat Heritage Center, pointing to a huge photo in the middle of the room.
So, here's a 360-degree wide shot of the Spring Whaling Festival called Nalukduk. And what they do is they distribute every part of the whale. Here's my sister Jessica right there, my brother Jonathan, and me.
This is not the only piece in the museum that Hobson has a personal connection to. An intricate baleen ship that his father made sits in a glass case just behind us. And a few steps further into the lobby is the expansive wooden desk that belonged to his grandfather, Eben Hobson Sr., the hugely influential first mayor of the North Slope borough.
I feel like me carrying his name is a big deal for me because he did things for our people during his time. And I feel like I need to do something for our people during this time.
Hobson says that when he thinks about the future of the North Slope, the thing that weighs most heavily on his mind is climate change. Like many places in Alaska, Utqiagvik is experiencing coastal erosion, and Hobson says he worries that by the time he's 50, they might have to move the town. Last year, he actually made a short movie about climate change that he shared online, featuring interviews that he did with town residents, including the city mayor. He loves photography and video, and he says that in the future, he'd also like to make movies about whaling from an insider's perspective. He thinks that what most of the media represent about this place to the outside world doesn't show the whole picture.
What they see up here and what they do with their cameras, like during whaling season, they only focus on the blood. They only focus on like what they see as bad. And like me being like a native kid in this community, I feel like I'll bring out what I see traditionally.
Hobson says that after high school, he hopes to get his bachelor's degree in either film or journalism so he can be part of shaping the stories that are told about the place that he calls home. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig, Inutkeavik.
We're a week into the 2018 Olympics in South Korea. Alaska sent a record number of athletes to the Winter Games, giving viewers a number of chances to cheer them on. Tonight at 9 p.m., Alaskans can tune in live to the men's 15-kilometer skate race. There are three cross-country skiers from Alaska in that race, including Scott Patterson, who sent us this update from the Olympic Village.
I'm Scott Patterson. I'm a cross-country skier from Anchorage, Alaska, and I am currently at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. And so far, it's been a pretty amazing experience. Coming in as a rookie to the Olympics, I've spent a lot of time on the World Cup, but you come to this venue and it just all the teams are here. We're staying with probably 1,000 other athletes in the Olympic Village. There's bobsledders, there's sliding sports, there's all the different groups, and it's pretty amazing. I raced in the 30K skiathlon, which is 15K of classic skiing with a transition in the middle and then 15K of skate skiing. It takes about an hour 15 usually. And going into the race, I've had one top 30 on the World Cup this year, so top 30 was really my goal. But I ended up 18th, which was a pretty amazing finish for me. Definitely my best race on the World Cup. As a competitive skier, it's always looking for more, always looking for that next step. Kind of, okay, can I get into the top 10 now? So we have quite a few more races coming up. The next one for me is the 15K skate. And I'm really excited for that one because I had quite a strong skate leg in the skiathlon. And we just take that away for the next race and give it my best go.
That was Anchorage skier Scott Patterson at the Winter Olympics in South Korea. Patterson joins his fellow APU teammates Eric Bjornson and Tyler Cornfield on the start line of the 15-kilometer skate race, which you can live stream in Alaska tonight at 9 p.m. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Ed Schoenfeld, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Renee Gross in Wrangell, Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik, and Emily Russell in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.